welcome to Perfectville, your first place podcast of your, wait for it. Some of you have been waiting 2 years and 80 long-ass episodes for it. Your first place Miami Dolphins. That's right, the undefeated first place of the AFC East Miami Dolphins after they walk into Los Angeles for a freaking home game on the West Coast and come out victorious. My name is Sam Marcoux. His name is Chris Cullen. Chris, how are you feeling after this week 1/week 2 undefeated streak that the Miami Dolphins have going on?
There's a famous gif from the show Curb Your Enthusiasm where he just looks very like, yeah, no. Like, it's just well used, and that's how I'm feeling right now. Like, happy we won, of course. Happy we got to see some Miami Dolphins football. That game flew by. But of course, Sam, in perfect Miami Dolphins fashion, they never lack for giving us something to talk about in between their games.
What did we say, Chris, about 3 episodes ago, right on the eve of the season, at least what we thought was going to be the eve of the season, was that if nothing else, the Miami Dolphins would be entertaining this year. They would give us something to talk about. It didn't mean that they were necessarily going to be good all season long or that they were going to win every single game and battle, but they were always going to give us something to talk about. And this week is no different. As you guys know, we went to the San Diego / Los Angeles Chargers, and we came out victorious 19-17 on the leg of Cody Parkey and his 4 field goals. What are your overall thoughts of the game, Chris?
We look like a team that hadn't played yet. I guess I'll say that. Everything from Adam Gase to Jay Cutler to our defensive pass rush to everybody that's not Jay Ajayi and Jarvis Landry looked like there was a little bit of rust there. I mean, everybody other than Jay Ajayi had negative yards rushing. That's Kenyon Drake. That's Landry. That's Cutler. Of course, his sacks count. We had no pass rush at all from Cam Wake, Sue, or any of the guys there that are normalities when it's getting in the backfield and causing trouble to opposing quarterbacks. Other than Cody Parkey, Ajayi and Cutler and a sprinkle of other guys, you know, Landry, of course, with his insane, like 57 catches, but, our offensive line looked okay, giving Cutler some time, but we definitely looked rusty. We looked like a team that has been displaced from a hurricane that, traveled to the West Coast earlier than they normally would in a normal circumstance, a team that did not play week 1 and was opening their season in week 2. We looked like all of those things, but here it is, Sam, we won. We got the victory. We're 1-0. So given all of that bullshit that we are tugging along behind us, I'd say we got out of there with a victory, no injuries. And I'm happy, very happy.
Yeah, I think you got to be happy with that win. We were not exactly 100% at our best. I think even Adam Gase said that he was rusty with the play calling. If you look no further than really towards the end of the first half, Chris, kind of some funky use of timeouts as well as some play calling there, which I didn't quite understand. We'll get back to that here in a second. And, of course, the defense didn't look great. Phillip Rivers is a great quarterback, and they have some talent on that roster over there on the Chargers side of the football. But given the fact that we've had injuries to the middle linebacker position as well as people going AWOL, which we will definitely talk about with Lawrence Timmons here before too long because we have some breaking news here before too long that we need to talk about. But given the fact that the middle of the field was basically being manned by a guy who's supposed to be on the practice squad, Chris, the fact that they have people like Antonio Gates and Hunter Henry, and I warned everybody. I told everyone Hunter Henry was a guy to look out for in this game. I mean, this guy, he's a talented tight end. He's like 22, 23 years old. He is the heir apparent to Antonio Gates. Yes, Antonio Gates caught the touchdown pass to break the record of Tony Gonzalez for all-time touchdowns by a tight end, but Hunter Henry was the go-to target, along with Keenan Allen, who could not be covered by anybody in the Miami Dolphins secondary. He ate our lunch, breakfast, and dinner. But all that aside, I mean, they really only did give up 17 points. It kind of harkened back to that bend-but-don't-break defense from the Dave Wannstedt, Jimmy Johnson era to me, and where they're giving up a ton of yardage, it seemed like. But at the end of the day, they did just enough to win. And you know what? It almost looked like it was going to be a Dave Wannstedt-style defense where the offense finally takes the lead and then the defense lets us down again. But the football gods were on our side. They were not on the Chargers' side, and rightfully so, because the Chargers are an embarrassment of an organization, which we'll talk about here in a little bit. But I was at this game, Chris. And I got to tell you, beyond Jay Ajayi, beyond Jake Culler, who I thought looked better than I expected him to look after having that long layoff, even with a little bit of preseason football under his belt, and beyond Jarvis Landry being everywhere, and beyond Devontae Parker just plucking footballs out of the sky, the MVP of this game, along with Cody Parkey, were the actual fans, the Dolphins, man. It's been talked about here on Monday and Tuesday as well as Sunday night, but that place, that stadium, that soccer field that the Chargers call quote-unquote home was filled with more Dolphins fans than it was Charger fans. It started right at the beginning. I took my seat in the end zone. The Chargers were actually coming out. You would have expected a huge roar from the home crowd, except we didn't get that, Chris. We got a Let's Go Dolphins chant right off the bat. It did not end up being anything different for the entire game. It didn't matter if it was the first quarter, second quarter, third quarter, or fourth quarter. We were getting Let's Go Dolphins chants. We had a pro-Miami Dolphins crowd. And the only time I heard any sort of booing for anything that wasn't related to the actual Chargers team was when the refs kept screwing up and saying, timeout San Diego, oops, I mean Los Angeles, as well as the owner of the actual Chargers announced at halftime, the Spanos family. Those are the only times you heard boos, but it was a great atmosphere to watch a game in, and the Dolphins on the West Coast came out strong, man. It was impressive to see.
You got to give shout out to you and your West Coast brethren there, because this same thing happened at the Coliseum last year. I remember your videos very vividly playing against the Rams in that game where we were losing the entire time, and instead of leaving, not only did they not leave, we got a Let's Go Dolphins chant as we won the game there in the last few seconds. Tannehill hit Parker on that 5-yard out in the end zone. So the West Coast Dolphins, tip of the cap to you guys. I mean, it was unreal. And just to let you know, Sam, and anybody else that was at that game live listening to Perfectville Now, watching that game on TV, all we talked about, my family and friends that were in the man cave, were how it doesn't even feel like we're on the road right now. They welcomed us in at Oxnard there, the Cowboys facilities, and put signs up, temporary signs, to make us feel as home as possible for the week leading up to the game. And the fans were unreal. I mean, cheers for touchdowns. Let's Go Dolphins chants. They even lit off a cannon for us when they missed the field goal. So, I mean, it was fantastic. So tip of the cap all around. Kenny Stills said it after the game. It felt like a home game. Phillip Rivers said it after the game that you wouldn't have known that this the Miami Dolphins were the road team based on how the crowd was. A nice little shot to the fan base there. And obviously the horrible mishandling of Spanos family and what they've done with that horrible organization and those poor fans in San Diego. So, yeah, tip of the cap for sure, man. You guys were insane.
Well, let's work backwards. Let's start with the kick that missed here. The kick that actually sailed right and it was on its way back towards San Diego. One of the funniest things I've ever been a part of. So right before that, I was actually sitting in that end zone. I was on the sidelines in that end zone, the same end zone where Kenny Stills caught his touchdown pass. Going into the fourth quarter, I was with my girlfriend who doesn't have a lot of experience when it comes to football. She's not big on sports. I'll tell you for an example, week one where we had our bye week, she was like, hey, do you want to watch some football? And I said, sure, that'd be nice. She goes, who's playing? And I'm like, everyone's playing. What do you mean who's playing? It's not like two teams are playing. All the teams are playing. What kind of question is that? But she went to the game. She was a trooper. She enjoyed herself. I got to tell you this, man. We went to the game. We parked not at the stadium. More on that later. But on our way to the stadium, all of a sudden we heard a loud pop and we felt something on our legs and on our pants and on our shirt. And we looked down and there was a huge like travel pack of barbecue sauce that somebody had thrown from their car, hit the ground and exploded all over her and myself. Now, I don't think it was on purpose. I don't think anyone was throwing barbecue sauce at us on purpose for being Dolphins fans. I think somebody just happened to be, because it's LA and people don't give an F, threw it out of their window and it happened to nail us. So we got nailed with a barbecue bomb. Later on, I bought a soda and a hot dog. I went to put mustard on the hot dog, Chris. The soda actually fell out of my hands and got me completely soaked on top of the barbecue sauce. And then I took a bite of the hot dog, and the hot dog, like a cartoon, squirted out the back of the bun and landed on my crotch, giving me mustard dick. I was having so much food spilled all over me. It was like, I am a mess, and I haven't even started drinking yet. I was thinking, this is going to be a bad game. It's going to be an awful game. But come the fourth quarter, we were losing, and strategically, I wanted to get out of there before the traffic. I didn't want to leave the game early, and I also wanted to check out the stadium. So I told her, look, at the start of the fourth quarter, let's walk around. It's a big soccer open-air field. We can see the game anywhere we are. So we walked on the lower bowl where our seats were, and we happened to make our way over to the Dolphins' side of the end zone. Well, we happened to be sitting there, and we see this drunk dude with a humongous Jay Cutler fathead walking around with this Jay Cutler fathead, distracting Charger fans. They're yelling at him. He didn't give a shit. He's walking right up to him. He's pretending he's Jay Cutler, walking around, not giving a fuck. It was the funniest thing I'd seen in a long time. And while we're there, something insane happened, and that was, of course, that the Dolphins go down, kick a field goal. They make a stop when they need to make a stop after about, I think, a 4 or 5 and out, and they come back, and I happen to make myself present right between the uprights, Chris, as Cody Parker lined up for that 54-yard bomb, and I got the whole thing on video, them setting up, them snapping, them kicking it, and you hear me screaming, it's good, it's good. I'll try to get the audio ripped and put it at the end of this episode so you guys can hear just how much of a teenage boy I turned into watching sports when I looked like it was going to be the game winner. Now, years and years and years, Chris, and you know this, of abuse of being a Dolphins fan told me that there was a minute left on the clock. Philip Rivers was getting the ball and had timeouts in his possession. This game was not over, and I told my girlfriend, look, we came in on the other side of the field. We're going to watch this last minute as we walk over there because inevitably when the Dolphins blow this game, I don't want to hear it from any Charger fans. I just want to escape out of this stupid stadium as quickly as possible. So that's exactly what we did. We walked all the way around to the other side. We could hear cheering. We could hear booing because, again, there's a lot of Dolphins fans. And all of a sudden we look and we're like, crap, there's a 44-yard field goal. The Dolphins call timeout for the Chargers with 10 seconds left, which we'll talk about that as well. And wouldn't you know it, I'm sitting in the other end zone when the Chargers kick and miss the field goal and they blow off the cannons like they just won World War II. And the place for Charger fans went nuts. They're pointing in my face. They're laughing. They're saying Chargers, all this. And I'm looking at him like, why are you guys so happy? And he's like, because he made the kick. And I'm like, no, I think you need to take a look at the field because the refs are waving it off. The Dolphins are doing backflips and the Chargers are sitting there crying in their, you know, microbrews down there in Southern California. And the fans couldn't figure out why. And they're like, but they blew off the cannons. I'm like, because the cannons aren't the official scorekeeper of an NFL game. We had an overzealous cannon operator. And at that point, Jay Cutler sat down, took a knee, and the place erupted like it was a home game. And I strutted out of there, man, like I had just won the World Series all by myself. I was just walking around. I had barbecue sauce and mustard and soda and God knows what else all over my pants. And I didn't give a shit. I'm like, let's go to the car and let's drive 6 hours to home, honey. I'm feeling it. It was a fantastic way to watch the opening game for the Miami Dolphins and walk away, escape with a victory.
See, you're lucky they aren't still in San Diego, or else you'd have been closer to the ocean and you would have been inevitably 100% attacked by seagulls.
Yeah, I would have, but you know what? I would have had the ocean there and I could have washed off my pants instead of being a sticky mess like I was all the way back to Northern California. But that's neither here nor there. Cody Parkey, again, MVP, 4 field goals, including a 54-yarder. But I want to talk about some of the individual performances. Like you'd mentioned, Jay Ajayi, 4.4 yards per carry, 28 carries on the day, 120-plus yards. The guy was a beast out there. He picked up exactly where he left off last year, did he not?
He was unreal, and it's one of those things where he started off really slow last year, and this Chargers team is nothing to be laughed at when it comes to run defense. This is the first 100-yard rusher they gave up since 2016, and that's January of 2016. So they did not give up a 100-yard rusher in the last 17 games. Played, and Jay Ajayi is the first one to do it. Not only did he do it, he did 122 yards, and he did it all day. I mean, he was just doing it left and right, sweeps up the middle, breaking tackles. I think he had 8 or 9 broken tackles or yards after contact. So the guy was just absolutely a monster. He still has that chip on his shoulder where he doesn't want he's just taking something different every year. Last year it was Gase benched him in week 1 and left him home. Before that it was he's a 5th-round pick because of his degenerative knee that might be an issue later down the line, so he fell in the draft. And now this year it's, hey, that was a fluke, you're not going to be able to do it again. He's going to find something every year, and that's the type of guy that's a competitor and who you want on your team. I don't even think Damian Williams and Kenyon Drake had more than 1 carry. I mean, like, we didn't need it. Jay Ajayi was a workhorse, was amazing. Other than Gase calling a pretty sloppy game in the first half, really, we had a really good balance with our pass and run as well, and they really complemented each other.
Yeah, I mean, Jay Ajayi was the offensive star, in my opinion. I think he's on pace for over 400 carries this year. That's not going to get done, I don't imagine. At some point, they are going to have to divvy up some carries to some of these other guys. Kenyon Drake had 1 carry for -3 yards. Damian Williams, I don't even know if he saw the field, to be honest. But Kenyon Drake did have a nice special teams tackle, so he did contribute to the team victory overall. Jay Cutler looked like he was feeding. I don't know if it was by design or if it just was taking what they were giving him, but looked like he was force feeding Jarvis Landry early. And I got to tell you, Jarvis Landry had to reach back for a couple of balls, made some incredible catches. And I think with 13 catches for 70 some odd yards, he's already leading the league in catches after one game versus everyone else with two. They also had him run a reverse and also tried him on a wide receiver option pass. They were showcasing Jarvis Landry early. Do you think there was any reason for that other than they wanted to get him off and get him into the game? Or do you think maybe they're trying to showcase what he can do for a possible trade prospect later in this NFL season?
No, I think Jarvis Landry showed everything he needs to show if we want to get a trade partner. I think what we saw there was Adam Gase reminding the NFL that Jarvis Landry, our offense goes through him. And in the preseason, there was a lot of talk that Cutler was that Landry was going to be a bad pick in fantasy, and that he was obviously Cutler's very far down number three target because he like forced a ball to Stills and Parker during the preseason. But I think that was by design. We know that Landry's going to get a lot of work this season, a lot of catches. When you look at his numbers, his 13 catches and 78 yards is good. I mean, of course, it's insane, the volume of catches, but when you got 6 yards per catch, that's where that needs to be better. You know, that we need to get him down the field more. I think it was a lot of conservative play calling in the first half where we were just throwing really short, lots of screens, lots of crossing routes.
Yeah.
Lots of quick 2 yard arrow routes. I have a feeling they were just playing really deep on us and not wanting to get beat by Stills and Parker. And it's kind of really funny when you think about it, because if they have that defense that far in for like Jay Ajayi, for example, and they have 8 in a box, the last thing you should be doing is throwing it short. But I think that's why we had limited success in the first half. They came out right after halftime and immediately opened the offense up. Cutler was throwing it deep, throwing crossing routes, getting out of the pocket. Going deep to Parker, and then, of course, a beautiful throw on the run. It was unreal to Stills in that end zone where you were sitting there. So, like I said, they didn't play week one. Week two, this is their week one. Gase looked a little sloppy, admitted it himself in the first half. But our offense got around to it, and that's the type of offense we want to see, where we're controlling the ball with on the ground, opening up the passing, and letting Cutler rip a little bit in the second half. And I think we'll see a lot more of that. And it was the talk of a lot of the national media. I saw a long story I retweeted on Twitter where the NFL Network guys in the morning were talking about how, like, the weapons that Jay Cutler has and the way he spread it around. If you look at the numbers, you know, Parker with 4 catches, Stills with 2, Landry with 13. So, like, Parker and Landry both had almost 80 yards apiece, Parker 85, but Stills got the touchdown. So, and Ajayi had 122 yards rushing. That is the complement and the balance of offense, what makes it so difficult to defend.
Yeah, the other thing that was kind of cool to see was how they were using Julius Thomas. I mean, he caught 3 balls for like 20 some odd yards, which isn't, you know, doesn't jump out at you, but he was only targeted 3 times. So it made the most of his targets that were, you know, when Jay Cutler was looking his way. But he was lined up outside on the opposite side of the trips a lot, Chris. And man, I know he's a big guy, but you have to see him in person to really appreciate how big of a man Julius Thomas really is. Because you put him out there, you know, flanked out wide, and you go, oh my God, you could just throw him the ball right there, almost like a little tight end screen to the outside. And if he's got a cornerback on him, that guy's going to bounce right off that big giant of a man. So it was kind of cool to see the different looks that we gave the Chargers defense. One thing to keep in mind as well is I think we did look sloppy, but what did we talk about after week one, Chris? There was a lot of sloppy, bad football across the NFL in week one. So this was really our week one. So it makes sense that we came out a little bit rusty. I think we benefited from a Chargers team that's still trying to figure out their identity, whether they are going to be a veteran team looking to try to get to the Super Bowl or if they have to completely rebuild. They have a little bit of an identity crisis there, and it has to do with a guy named Philip Rivers, who's at the tail end of his career, and he's got a lot of young weapons around him, but they really got to figure out what they're going to do there. So it really did help that we had that. I think it helped that we had the fans. Devontae Parker, I mean, I talked about the 50-50 balls that he was taken away from LA Rams defenders last year. He did the same thing twice in this game, except they didn't get called back for penalty this time. I mean, the guy just took the ball away from the defender who was and looked seemingly in perfect position on the touchdown drive. He did it again later. He also caught one when he got nailed quite illegally out of bounds in the second quarter. And yeah, he did have a fumble, which was actually ruled an incomplete pass, but he caught that ball in traffic as well. I mean, the guy's just out there using his physical attributes. It was a pleasure to see.
Yeah, I think he's confident. He has a lot of confidence going into the season. Everybody's been talking him up, and he believes it in good reason. He has the gifts to do it. He has the size to do it. And when you have a quarterback like Jay Cutler that's going to totally lean on you, I mean, like, there, he's never covered. And Jay Cutler knows that. He's smart enough. He's been around the block enough to know a guy like Devontae Parker is very much the exception, not the rule, when it comes to wide receiver position in the NFL. So when he's out there and there's single high safety and he's not over the top and you got a corner on this guy, there's no one that's going to cover him. I don't care if it's Sean Smith, you throw it up, because Devontae Parker, you're going to trust him to get the ball. And even if you throw a pick once or twice, you're going to come out of the other end with the benefits of throwing it to Parker like that a lot more than you're going to lose the ball. So, you know, Cutler's going to keep chalking it up to him. It's going to be fun for us to see. Like you said, it's just going to be nothing but excitement for the Miami Dolphins. And yeah, we are a little sloppy, but let's look at some good things. I mean, a run defense was great against a great back and Melvin Gordon. Our offensive line held up and did really well, and no turnovers. So, yeah, we didn't get any turnovers either in defense, but we're playing against Phillip Rivers and Melvin Gordon and Keenan Allen. These are good superstar guys. And we didn't turn the ball over at all. No fumbles there that we lost. So it was a clean game when you look at the things like that. And when that happens in week one and you are sloppy on the road, in our situation with the hurricane, and we come out with a victory, I mean, you can't be anything but happy.
Yeah, you have to walk away happy. But we should talk about some of those sloppy plays and some of the sloppy play calls. I mean, I can't help but think that Adam Gase had something else in mind other than that sequence of plays right before the half, Chris. It didn't make any sense. We were calling timeouts when we shouldn't have been calling timeouts. I really thought they were going to try to drive down and kick a field goal, being down 10-3, and try to get the score a little bit closer as we were going to get the ball in the second half. We called timeouts at funky times. Then we called our third timeout with like 4 seconds left, and everyone's kind of complaining about Jay Cutler's Hail Mary pass. I got to be honest with you guys, it was not a Hail Mary pass. It was fourth down, and he was running outside to kill the clock and then just threw the ball away. It was not intended to be a jump ball or anything else. He was burning the clock so they could get into the locker room at halftime, which, by the way, there was a fight in the tunnel on the way in because of what happened to Devontae Parker previously. But, man, what a stilted, disjointed sequence of plays there, Chris. What the hell happened?
Yeah, and it's one of those things with Adam Gase where he's very universally well-loved from the Miami Dolphins fans, us included. I mean, I think I can speak for you, Sam, that we both really are happy with Adam Gase, and I think he's our future head coach for a long time, I hope. But it was pretty interesting to see Twitter that first half where it was pretty much also universally agreed upon, looking at all of our fans that we follow and follow us on Twitter, that were pretty negative on Adam Gase and his play calling and the handling of time management and things like that. And that's stuff where he's definitely still in year two of the league. It's been a crazy road for him this offseason, losing Tannehill, calling Cutler, the hurricane, displacing guys. You know, we talked about this last year, and I know we did early when we got Adam Gase, and that was one thing how I compared it to me being a branch manager at the bank, where I thought I always wanted it and I couldn't wait to do it. And then once you got the position, you realize all the things that come with it that you don't see on a day-to-day basis, as far as him doing bed checks and checking the routes and what's for dinner, what's for breakfast for the guys, are the hotels booked and things like that, just little things that you have to handle as a head coach. And he had a really busy week, and that culminated with Lawrence Timmons going MIA and then putting out a missing persons report on the night prior to their first game after all this shit, hurricanes and all this, and it's displaced them. So Adam Gase was definitely not in a very comfortable mindset, I don't believe, coming into the game on Sunday. It showed in the first half. He was more sloppy than normal. His play calling didn't seem to have a lot of rhyme or reason. It seemed very preseason almost. It's like he traveled from the hurricane and didn't bring his regular season playbook and still had week four's preseason playbook because it was very vanilla and very conservative in the very first half. But he seemed to open it up, got comfortable. There is probably a magnitude of things, I'm sure, but I'm very confident he'll clean it all up.
Well, I think Lawrence Timmons took the actual playbook, so he was just left with the preseason vanilla playbook until halftime when they're able to locate him. I wanted to talk about a couple other things, but you know what? Let's transition over to what the story of the week actually is. It's not that the Miami Dolphins are 1-0. It's not that they're going to New Jersey to play the Jets, which we will have our preview episode out later this week. Look out for that. It's the fact that our middle linebacker, our starting middle linebacker, our prized free agent that we signed this offseason, Chris, after 10 years with the Pittsburgh Steelers, never an issue with the league, never an issue with the law, just a guy who gets up, one of those lunch pail guys who goes to work. His very first game, his official first game for the Miami Dolphins, he gets gone on Saturday. Nobody can find him. He's AWOL. Nobody knows how to get a hold of him. The Miami Dolphins, as you pointed out, Chris, filed multiple missing persons reports. The Pittsburgh Steelers got into this, trying to find him as well, which kind of makes me laugh a little bit. Like when your kid's missing and you call your kid's friend's parents and be like, hey, is Jimmy around? I haven't seen him. Is he with your kid? Like, I don't know. Let me call around. The Steelers were looking for him. The Dolphins were looking for him. The police finally find him at the airport looking to bug out and get on a plane to Pennsylvania to reportedly see his kid and or his kid's mom. Which, look, I can understand baby mama making you crazy to the point where you want to leave, but typically you don't leave to go see her. Trust me, typically you want to get on a plane and get as far fuck away from her as you possibly can. We don't know all the details, Chris. What we do know is that he was not active for that game, breaking his 101 starting game streak, that which was the longest for a front seven player in the NFL currently, and he is now officially suspended indefinitely by the Miami Dolphins. What do you make of this crazy ass story, Chris?
It was unreal. We played at 4 o'clock Eastern on Sunday, and right before the 1 o'clock game started rolling on, Twitter started blowing up that Lawrence Timmons is missing. And at first it was somebody not really reliable. I forgot who it was, but we're just like, yeah, whatever. Maybe let's wait. Oh, it was, oh God, what's his name? Not Casserly. He works for Casserly. Anyway, he got the glasses. He looks like Drew Carey a little bit. I forgot his name. That's how forgettable he is. But he always tries to break stories, and no one ever believes him. But then Jay Glazer came out, and that's a guy I trust when it comes to breaking news about the NFL. He has really solid sources. So he started talking about Lawrence Timmons being gone, and I started calling my brother and dad. Everybody's about to be arriving to my house to watch some 1 o'clock games and kind of get ready for the Dolphins at 4, and we didn't know what to make of it because, like, at first, and really now, no one knew what was going on, what was happening, who misses a game. I hope he's not hurt. Was he arrested? Was it a DUI? You know, what could it be? And the more little things have trickled out, the odder it gets. And I think everything just points to how the Dolphins are going to handle it. So that's going to tell you, I think, a lot. And it really has with them and suspending him indefinitely. David Hyde for the Sun Sentinel had a great his pick five, he always does, had a great one, and he says in his number four that he don't expect Timmons back. And he thinks that with us suspending him indefinitely, this wasn't something as sensitive that will come out down the road, that the Dolphins are going to look bad in light. You know, if they're going to suspend him indefinitely, it's not like, hey, man, my son was choking and dying and my maid said he might not be making it, so I need to leave. I think we would totally give him an excused absence for that. Adam Gase isn't Satan. You know, like Stephen Ross, these guys have all been able to do that. I mean, we let Tunzel miss multiple practices, and there's questions about that. And is, oh, yeah, how about this? It's because he's becoming a father for the first time and was there for the baby being born. You know, he wasn't suspended. I mean, that's something Gase truly just gave him a day off for. So if this was an emergency where like family's life was on the line, I don't think Adam Gase would be trading for a linebacker, bringing guys in to work out and suspending Timmons indefinitely. Because here's the thing, another point in Hyde's story, Timmons has a lot of guaranteed money.
Oh yeah.
And in the CBA, there is clauses where guaranteed money isn't always guaranteed. And one of those things that get that guaranteed money a little fluttered is if you get suspended. If you get suspended for detrimental to the team, it could be a breach of contract if he leaves when he's supposed to be contracted by the Miami Dolphins to play in a football game and injury wasn't keeping him out and there was not an emergency or anything like that, unforeseen circumstances, and he just didn't handle a shit and he left, he could be breaching his contract and they could be getting out of guaranteed money. So suspending him indefinitely is a very big step in A, them figuring out what to do, B, giving them time to maybe let the dust settle a little bit and Timmons come to his right mind. And three, it gets him time to bring in guys, trade for guys, which we'll talk about in a minute, and possibly save themselves a lot of guaranteed money they gave this dude.
I like that you said AB3. That was awesome. Your 3 points for AB3. That's how frustrated we are with Lawrence Timmons. We're getting confused with letters and numbers and shit. You know what I mean? Like it's ridiculous. And the more you look at it, Chris, I mean, I think the initial reaction was, fuck Lawrence Timmons. How could he do this? Then it was, you know what? We don't know what's going on. Maybe there is something going on with his family or there's a mental health issue. Maybe we're jerks for jumping to conclusions. And then all of a sudden right. It was like, you know what? No, something bad happened here with regards to Lawrence Timmons' mindset. He made some bad decisions. And there's a couple of different theories that I've seen out there, Chris. One of them being the one that he bugged out to go see his kid and didn't really bother to tell anybody, which still doesn't sound accurate to me. I feel like there's more to the story than just that. There's got to be something that lit that fire. One of the things I read on Twitter, which, by the way, you can follow the show at Perfectville Pod on Twitter, was that perhaps they floated a theory, and I can't remember who it was, and if it was you and you're listening, I apologize, that he missed a meeting or was late for a meeting, and as punishment, he was informed sometime on Saturday that he would not start because he was late to the meeting or missed that meeting, and as a result of that punishment, decided, fuck this, I'm out of here because of his streak now going to be snapped, and decided to leave the team in a moment of anger. Now, that sounds silly, but at the same time, could be very plausible for somebody who maybe had a lot of pride in starting all those games, maybe had a lot of pride in being a leader and messed up and decided, you know, I don't know how to handle this, I'm just going to leave. But now he's in a situation, Chris, because you're right, 99% of that contract was guaranteed. Mike Tannenbaum, I don't know what he was doing when he gave out a two-year, pretty much 100% guaranteed contract. I think the only thing that wasn't guaranteed were workout bonuses, which is a very, very minor part of that contract. Now, the Miami Dolphins may be able to get out of the 2018 portion of that guaranteed contract, which is about $4.5 million, which does make it possible for him possibly to be cut, because right now you can't cut him, because if you cut him, all that money is guaranteed goes to the cap this year, and guess what? We'd then be over the cap, and we'd have to actually restructure or release somebody else in order to just cut Lawrence Timmons as it stands right now. So you're right. I think this is the only real avenue they could take if they needed to punish him, was to suspend him indefinitely, which will be up to four games before the Players Association comes into play, and to take his spot is somebody that we just traded for, former first-round pick, Mr. Stephon Anderson, former inside and outside linebacker for the New Orleans. Anthony, what did I say? Anderson? I did.
Anderson, yeah.
I did. I'm sorry. And look, I was trying not to mess up his first name. I messed up his last name. Stephon Anthony. I don't know what his first name is, but his last name is definitely Anthony, and he is now on the Miami Dolphins. Formerly of the Saints, played a lot his rookie season, was actually on the all-rookie team, hasn't really done much since then, but that's due to a lot of defensive scheme changes as well as positional changes. His best position seems to be inside, which, well, wouldn't you know it, the Miami Dolphins happen to have an opening at the middle linebacker spot. I don't really know what to think of this. I think this is obviously a reaction to what we are experiencing at the middle linebacker spot, whether it be injuries or people bugging out or people just not ready to play. But we now have ourselves a new linebacker, Chris.
Yeah, welcome to the team, Stephon Anthony. it's just one of those, in all seriousness, I like to look at stuff like this. When we trade for a guy, I love going on Twitter and reading Saint fans' reaction to it. So I go and I look at the original breaking story that has got the most retweets and the most comments, and I shuffle through them. And two things I found interesting. The fans, majority of them, hate this trade. They hate that the Saints gave up on this guy. A lot of Saint fans think that he excelled his rookie year. Their coaches don't know what they're doing. They moved him outside after he had 112 tackles, a sack, and an interception as a rookie, all-rookie team like you aforementioned. And then what do you do the next year? You move him outside. How does that make sense? The Saints have notoriously had a horrible defense for the last long time. Drew Brees has been unapologetically been playing on a very bad football team, only due to the fact that his defense can't play football. And that's not due to the players. They have a lot of good players, Nick Fairley's, and the safety that looks like Kenny Vaccaro, that looks like Kaepernick. You know, they have these guys, these good players, and these rookie linebackers that were like, you know, captains at Clemson, like Stephon Anthony. So the Saint fans are not happy. Cam Jordan, the number one name defensive player for the Saints, is my second point. He was pissed. So looking at his Twitter page, he said he logs on just to log right off because he quoted the fact that he got traded, Stephon Anthony, and he said, hashtag go and eat. So or like a great young player or something up on the rise. So these guys that share a locker room with him are mad he is no longer on their team. And a cool twist of this entire story is we play the Saints in 2 weeks.
Absolutely. I think that's going to be a lot of fun. And it would not surprise me if he is the starting middle linebacker of that game. Probably will be his first start for the Miami Dolphins, I would imagine, after he gets up to speed here this week going into week 3, game 2 for the Miami Dolphins.
And real quick, somebody, well, great fan on Twitter. I wish I can give you credit. I'm sorry. I took a snapshot of the photo you posted, but not you. Sorry. So if it's you, tweet at us. I'll definitely retweet you and mention you next time. But his measurables at the combine, Stephon Anthony, he is 84th percentile in height. He was the top inside linebacker prospect with a 20-yard shuttle. the 40-yard dash, and my most important to me as a former linebacker and a defensive coordinator myself is his 20-yard dash was the fastest by far for middle linebacker prospects, which that's where you play. That's at 20 yards downhill, sideline to sideline. So he ran a 4.5 at the combine, strong kid, played at Clemson, captain. I'm excited to see if we put him in the right position and see if he excels.
I wonder if he can actually play in any sort of pass coverage, because the one thing I did notice is that Phillip Rivers and the Los Angeles Chargers were looking down the middle of the field quite a bit. Only that, they picked on Byron Maxwell pretty much all damn day.
Sleeves.
I mean, you have so much material. Can't you just throw that thing and lasso Keenan Allen once? I mean, my God, my dude, I don't even want to talk about it anymore. It's just, if we were still giving out the Dallas Thomas Worst Player Ever Award, well, it would go to Lawrence Timmons, but my number two would be Byron Maxwell, because good God, they weren't even, they were pointing to him and saying, we're going there. You know what I mean? Like,
right.
It was so bad. But that's neither here nor there. We're actually on to bigger and better things. Speaking of bigger and better things, the reviews keep pouring in, Chris. We have had a ton of bigger and better things and a new history-making review for the Perfectville podcast. As we talk about, you guys can get yourself a Perfectville koozie, sip sack, a Rondé Bagston if you give us a 5-star rating and review on iTunes. I'm pretty liberal with this stuff, guys, so if you want one, just go ahead and let me know that you're a listener of this show. Send me your information, and I'll be sending out the second batch of sip sack koozies out to everyone that has ordered one here the last couple of weeks, including you, Slainer. I feel so bad, Chris. Slainer, one of our original listeners and one of our original reviewers, I told him I had sent it to him, and it must be something that's going on with the Postal Service, and then I checked all my receipts and realized that I never sent Slainers.
Oh, no.
So here I am.
That's one guy.
Yeah, here I am blaming the United States Postal Service, and it turns out it's my stupid fault. So, Slainer, my bad. Your frosty hands at this point, they probably chopped your hands off. You have no way of even holding on to the sip sack, but I'll get one out to you soon. But some of the others here, Chris, I need to point these out. Like I said, we have a couple of new ones. We actually have a lot of them. But this one here, this one hurt my feelings a little bit, Chris. I'm not going to lie.
Uh-oh.
Yeah, this came from Rusty Shackelford, which I think is the name that I know. And he gave us 4 stars. So we are no longer Perfectville, Chris. We had a perfect 5-star rating across the board, and out of nowhere, Rusty Shackelford turns Perfectville into Imperfectville with the title of Great Once the Football Talk Starts. He says, really enjoy this as a Dolphins fan, but it takes way too long to get to the actual Dolphins talk. It seems like there's 10 minutes of hawking koozies or some nonsense at the beginning of each episode. Would be great to get right to it. And 4 stars out of 5. Now, look, I will say this. It hurt my feelings to see that empty star there from Rusty Shackelford. But, you know, I stayed in a 4-star hotel this week down in Los Angeles, and it was rather nice. It was 4 out of 5 stars, and I thought I could stay here again. So I guess it's not the end of the world. It wasn't 1 star or 2 stars or even 3 stars, Chris. 4 stars. But what do you make of this? We talk too much about the koozies, apparently, for Rusty Shackelford's liking.
Yeah, I mean, I'm heartbroken, honestly, Sam. I mean, yeah, 4-star hotels are nice. They're great for sure. But I feel like Lawrence Timmons missing my 101 game streak. It's broken. It's snap, man. We just lost our first non-5-star review. What the hell?
We did. We lost our first 5-star review, and Rusty Shackelford lost his chance to get a free Rondé Bagston koozie because you were supposed to give us 5 stars, Rusty. Not 4. You could have still knocked us in the actual review, but you should have given us 5 stars. I would have been happy to give it to you. But I do get his point. You know, I listen to other podcasts, and there's like 10 minutes of commercials up front, and it's really annoying. I'm like, just get to the content. So maybe we'll pipe it down here a little bit. We just wanted to get it out there. We thought we were doing a fun thing, and it was fun to read these and shout out everyone. So we'll just do the next 15 that we have here, and then we'll move on here. Does that sound good, Rusty? Good. Of course it does. This comes from Bilger34. He says, great podcast. I always look forward to listening. Dolphins fan from Southeast Pennsylvania, fins up. Southeast Pennsylvania, Chris. This actually might be Lawrence Timmons himself. Because isn't that where he was headed? But no koozie for you if you are Lawrence
Timmons.
Couldn't
if he went and just checked on his kid or something? Could he have called him, told him to check on his kid so he wouldn't have to leave California?
Yeah, look, we were here for you, Lawrence Timmons. We could have done that. All you had to do was call one of our Perfectville citizens. They would have said, hey, the kid's cool. Go suit up. Knock the snot out of Melvin Gordon and, you know, we wouldn't be talking about you right now, but he didn't take the proper steps. But somebody who did take the proper steps is R.D. Jess, and he says, also better than Isotoner Gloves, 5 stars. This podcast is the best thing to happen to Dolphins since Daniel and Veronica Marino copulated in 1961. Well, except for 72 and 73, a must-listen for all Dolphins fans. Absolutely correct. Thank you, RD Jess. Let me know what your address is, and I'll be happy to give you an Aronde Bagston all to yourself. We have a couple more. Best football podcast of all time. This comes from Dev Quando. These guys give it to you straight, the good, the bad, and the ugly. As the New York Finhead, they keep me up to date with all my Dolphins news. Good chemistry between the hosts, and they are funny. Fins up. Thank you very much, Dev Quando. I think you already contacted us, perfectvillepodcast@gmail.com. Your sip sack will be on its way, just like Slaner's before too long. Don't hold your breath. I'm lazy. This one comes from Palm Coast Fins fan. Perfectville Podcast, 5 stars. I listen to Perfectville on my 1.5-hour commute to work. Good Lord, get a job closer to home. Keep up the great work, guys. Palm Coast Fins fan. Thank you very much. And the last one, Chris, this one confused the shit out of me. Our listeners are either brilliant or mean or both, because I suffer from dyslexia. It's really tough to read these things. It's kind of a cruel joke that I do this to myself. I'm going to read this slow so you can understand why this fucks with my head. But this comes from Puccio's on Madison. 5 stars. Tom Brady sucks ass is the title. And it says, these cats swear too much, boring on all things not Finns football, aren't objectively always negative, Omar Perkins, when it comes to analyzing the state of the Finns. Perfect Village is pure platinum, no reference. This is a must listen if a Finns fan. Hashtag 17-0, hashtag 18-1, hashtag enjoy. Fuck you, dude. That was hard to read normally, let alone for somebody who's got a, you know, reading problem like myself, man. But I did not mess that up. That's verbatim how he wrote it. You can go on iTunes and check that out. But you did get yourself 5 stars, Puccio on Madison. You did get yourself qualified to get into Aronde Bagston. I think he was messing with us. I think he's funny. But those are the reviews this week, Chris. We have 73 reviews now on iTunes. The goal is 100. I'll tell you what, I'll cut a deal for Rusty Shackelford. We get 100 reviews and call it 100 ratings and call it 75 reviews. I will not bring this up every episode anymore. So that is the mark. We need 27 more ratings and about, I don't know, 27 more reviews, and we will call this thing out. We'll just put it in the notes of the show, and we'll move on with our lives. Is that a deal for everyone? I think that's a good deal. It's time for one of my new favorite segments, Chris. We debuted this last week. It was a hit, so we're going to bring it back. And that, of course, is Welcome to the NFL. And this week, last week we awarded this to the USA Today for predicting that the New England Patriots would go 16-0 before they promptly lost their home opener and went 0-1 and are no longer in first place of the AFC East, because that's the Miami Dolphins. This week takes us back to Los Angeles, back to where the Chargers now call home, back to where the Rams call home. Both teams had a home game this week, Chris. The Rams played at USC. The Chargers obviously played in a soccer stadium. The Dolphins beat the Chargers. The Rams lost to the Redskins in overtime. Combined, both professional NFL football teams in Los Angeles had 83,000 people in attendance between the two games combined. Saturday night, same stadium where the Rams play, USC had 85,000. So I want that to sink into everyone. The two professional football teams in Los Angeles combined had less fans than the college team that plays in Los Angeles. And now, why is this important? It's important because the real football team of Los Angeles is the USC Trojans. The second team, UCLA Bruins. These guys have a lot of gall moving back into this area and thinking that they're just going to be able to take it over. More specifically, the Los Angeles / San Diego Chargers. The Rams are at least there before. They have an ingrained fan base. The Chargers, they are the law of diminishing returns. They are San Diego. They're not Los Angeles. They're completely different markets. And what Dean Spanos has done to that franchise, he should be stripped of his ownership rights. He took a fan base that was dwindling because of his suck-ass decisions and his loser team, and he ripped him out of San Diego because he has no money to fund a stadium on his own because he's a bad billionaire, and he decided to push in with Stan Kroenke, where now he has to pay rent to another NFL owner here in a couple of seasons, and he's playing at a soccer field that only houses 26,000 people, and they couldn't even sell it out on their first official game. And the only reason they got close to selling it out is because the opposing team, that's right, the Miami Dolphins, filled that motherfucker. 15,000 of the 25,000 fans that were there were Miami Dolphins fans, which means if you get a team in there that doesn't travel well, like the Jacksonville Jaguars or the Houston Texans or the Indianapolis Colts, you're going to be playing to a team that's going to have less fans than a high school team in Texas. You understand that, Dean Spanos? You've screwed over your loyal fan base in San Diego. You have no fan base to talk about in Los Angeles. And what's worse, you are so arrogant that you charged $100 to park a car at your stadium. Guess what? I didn't pay that $100. And about 3,000 other people didn't pay that $100. You know what we did? We parked a half mile away at the golf course that offered free parking, and we got our exercise because we're Los Angeles. We don't have fat people in Los Angeles. We have skinny people because we're health conscious and image conscious. So we walked. We got our exercise in before we fed our faces with hot dogs and beer and all that other fat stuff that we're able to burn off because we got our exercise in. Fuck you. Fuck the Los Angeles Chargers. Welcome to the NFL.
Wow. That was impressive. So I'm pretty interested. Like, I know that everything's expensive out there on the West Coast. Like, a one-bedroom shack is like $850,000 with like half an acre of land. So the fact that a golf course allowed you to park there for free, that is like unheard of around here in the North Carolina parts.
The only time that any – now, I got to tell you, Chris, the game itself was a pleasurable experience. There was no gangbanging. Everyone was happy. I mean, obviously, the Dolphins and Chargers were not rivals, but everyone there was cool with one another. Everyone was in it together. It was a fun atmosphere overall. But I got to tell you, man, the only time I saw these people get angry at during the entire game was when LaDainian Tomlinson at halftime mentioned the Spanos family. I've never heard more booing in my entire life. I don't think Jews have booed Hitler that hard. I mean, this guy is hated by San Diego Chargers fans, by Los Angeles Chargers fans, and by everyone in general. I mean, this guy is hated. He has devalued the franchise. I don't know how other NFL owners have actually been able to allow him to get away with this shit, because he took a once proud franchise and turned them into a laughingstock. They are the New York Jets on the West Coast. They pay rent to the Los Angeles Rams, much like the Jets used to pay rent to the Giants. It's embarrassing what he's done to this franchise.
Well, in such a huge market like Los Angeles, it doesn't mean that they should have two teams. I mean, I just think the NFL has fully bit off more they can chew with moving these two teams here, especially away from a city like San Diego that really did like and enjoy having the Chargers there, and to move them out and move it from St. Louis. And now you have like these three teams, two in Los Angeles, one going to Las Vegas. It's just all kinds of crazy stuff. I hate to see it. And it's all about money.
No, the best thing I saw was when you drive up to the StubHub Center, Chris, there's a huge billboard that shows Jared Goff in his Rams regalia. And it says season tickets for LA's real football team now on sale.
Oh.
And it's such a dig. And you have to look at it as you walk into the Chargers home stadium. And it was perfect because, man, I don't know. Like I said, they're failing out there. It's a complete failure. And Los Angeles, I'm a Los Angeles sports fan. We don't get behind anybody unless they're winning. That's just how it goes. So the Chargers have, like I said, an identity crisis. They will not have an LA fan base until they start winning. He messed up. He messed up real good. I think at some point he needs to think about selling this team to somebody who can do right by the fans, by the team, and by the players. Anyway, let's move on. I'm fired up. It's time to throw the wheel of whatever. Chris, since I just went on a tirade, well, I'm too tired, even though it's my turn. I'm going to defer to you. Want to go ahead and spin that wheel for us?
Yeah, I'm nice and rested. I just slept the last 10 minutes, so I'm going to go ahead and spin. I'm going to spin this thing now. Oh,
that was good. That was good.
Ooh, spinning.
I was so on fire that I got heartburn from that.
Heartburn sucks, man. The older I get, the more heartburn really blows ass.
It seems around the fall I get it 17 weeks out of the year. Maybe it's football related. I'm not sure. But anyway, what did that land on? Why don't you go ahead and read that off?
Oh, man, this is going to be a good one. I'm going to enjoy talking about this with you. So is there any kind of more hilarious – and believe me, as a Dolphins fan, I hate the Patriots, dude. You know that. But, man, I really like Rob Gronkowski. Like, I really like Gronk. I think it's hilarious. He injured his groin the same time he scored his 69th touchdown. as a tight end.
Look, it's not the first time I think he's injured his groin during a 69, but yeah, it's very appropriate that somebody like Gronkowski would injure his groin during some sort of sexual reference. It makes sense. I mean, I wouldn't have it any other way. And I agree with you. Rob Gronkowski is a guy that if he was on your team, you would cheer for him. But the fact that he's on the Patriots, you know, makes you want to hate him. But it's not Rob Gronkowski's fault. He's out there doing what he needs to do. And that is hilarious.
Hey, he could be a Dolphin instead we draft a Koamisi, but that's neither here nor there. but really, in all seriousness, how do the Patriots keep winning, Sam? They lose all their receivers. I mean, they're all hurt. I think they had, like, the guy that wears the yellow security shirt playing receiver for them in the second half in the Saints, and they couldn't be stopped. They just steamrolled the Saints, putting up numbers. Tom Brady, 450 yards passing. Unbelievable. No interceptions. I was forced to watch that game because it was the 1 o'clock game because the Dolphins played at 4 to make me wait just a little bit longer because week one wasn't enough. and they just looked so good with all of these injuries, even without Gronk for like the last part of the game. They still were just taking it down the field. When is this tyrannical era going to end? When is Tom Brady going to start looking old? When is he going to look like Eli Manning? Do you see him last night? Good Lord. When is this going to fall off the cliff and they're finally going to get rid of this piece of shit?
Well, I feel like this is partially my fault because I was digging on him last week and I said, what do you got, Chris Hogan? That's all you got left? That's nothing. And then he went out and scored like 85 touchdowns in the second half of that game. And I went, well, shut my mouth. That I guess Chris Hogan is 7-Eleven and he is open all day. It was artificially inflated because they're playing the Saints. The Saints have nobody on defense. Did you see their middle linebacker, Stephen Anthony, trying to cover anybody out there? It was garbage. I mean, if I was the Saints, I'd get rid of him to the next sucker that called about him if I were them. Oops. Oh, shit. Well, in case you're listening, welcome to Perfectville, Stephen Anthony. But no, I don't know the answer to that. I think it'll end later this year when we skullfuck them twice with no bye week at all, and the Miami Dolphins continue to rock first place in the AFC East all the way into the playoffs and create their own bye week, ladies and gentlemen. That's it. Create the bye. That is the hashtag. This is Perfectville. Chris, anything you want to say before we get out of here?
That's it, buddy. Great episode. It's good to be back. 1-0, first place.
First place, and this is officially Jets week. Rivalry week, FTJ. Hashtag FTJ. Goodbye from Perfectville.
Later.
Perfectville.